Millie the Cow, written and narrated by Jerry Kay. Part 2. Emmett Devine loved Jersey cows. He wasn't that fond of big black and white Holsteins or brown and white Guernseys, but he was crazy for the smaller, temperamental Jerseys who lactated high quantities of rich cream, along with the milk. Emmett talked about Jerseys like some men talk of cars or women, like certain women talk of thoroughbred horses or jewelry. I called him. "Emmett, I bought a Jersey calf, and she looks weak and sick. I need help. What should I do?"
"You bought a Jersey calf? Jerry, hold on. I'll come right down, right now."
In less than 2 hours, Emmett and his wife Yvonne drove up our road. Emmett jumped out of his pickup, looking like a prospector who had just struck gold. I took him down to the livestock yard where we had put the calf inside one of the straw-covered stalls of our goat barn, where she lay, quiet and frail. Emmett kneeled beside her and petted her back and head. Her sorrowful eyes looked up at him, and she licked his hand.
"Oh, she's a beauty," he said, "but too weak and too thin. Who would treat her like this? We have to get powdered formula. Where's the closest place?"
"Just a few minutes from here," I said. We jumped in my car and drove to Elkhorn Feed, a shed behind a rustic farmhouse run by an old farmer named Tiny, who stood 6'8". Emmett walked inside, took a deep breath, and smiled like a kid in an ice cream store. He walked around fingering the stacks of burlap feed sacks, the hanging galvanized feeders, and the leather and nylon livestock halters. Tiny ducked in through the doorway, and Emmett said, "Hello? Do you have any Cavillac on hand? My friend just got a Jersey calf."
"Yes, we do," said Tiny. "25-pound sack costs $6.70.
"Fine, we'll take one.
Those Jerseys can be a handful.
Kind of headstrong," said Tiny.
"Ah, but there's nothing finer than a good Jersey," Emmett said.
I asked him, "Won't we need a big cow-sized bottle feeder for her to suck the milk from?"
"No, Jerry, we'll have her drinking right out of a bucket."
"Okay, but she's too young to drink from a bucket."
"I'll show you," he said.
We drove home, and Emmett gently mixed the powdered formula with water into a large bucket.
"You sure we don't need a bottle with a nipple?" I asked.
"Watch." He picked up the calf and brought her outside and set the bucket down next to her. Holding her up on her wobbly feet, he dipped his three middle fingers in the bucket, then reached up with the milky fingers touching the calf's lips. He opened her mouth, and her long tongue gave his fingers a couple of licks. He wet his fingers again, and her body tensed, and she licked faster. Then her tongue came out, waiting for his milky fingers to reach out of the milk once again. But Emmett only raised them just to the surface of the milk, and she lowered her head to drink. He then put his fingers in the milk until the calf was slurping right from the bucket. She drank it all. That was all it took. At the next feeding, we put the bucket down beside her, holding it so she wouldn't knock it over, while her tongue set to work, lapping up the milk, her mouth swallowing until it was all gone. That evening as he left, Emmett said, "Let me know how she's doing and if you need anything. There's nothing finer than a good Jersey calf." She improved fast, putting on weight and growing stronger. I named her Millie after a friend who kept a small herd of cattle on a little farm in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina. Our baby goats were then about 3 weeks old, and I loved walking down to the yard to see them scamper and jump about like wild firecrackers. We put barrels standing up and on their sides in the goats' yards, along with boards as plankways, and they leaped up on them, dancing, frolicking, butting each other like four-legged Hollywood stunt actors. A couple of weeks after Millie arrived, we fed the kids their first grain, along with their milk. Trying to feed the animals together didn't work because the mother goats, Annie and Penelope, fought to eat all the food, any food, of all the animals. They behaved more in competition with their kids than nurturing them. We didn't have fences within the livestock yard, so while my wife fed the mother goats alfalfa and grain in one corner, and my sister fed the ducks,
I set bowls of grain for the kids behind the goat shed hidden from Annie and Penelope. They weren't stupid. As soon as the three little kids began to nibble the grain mixed with sweet molasses, Annie and Penelope rounded the shed, butted them out of the way, and gobbled up their feed. During the next few days, we tried many ways to keep them separated. Tethers, fences, barn doors. But as soon as Annie and Penelope saw us drawing near to the kids, hearing the rustle of the feed bags or the pans, they'd break from their restraints and rampage, chasing, bullying, and butting their own kids away from the meals. Still, we worked hard so that the kids got enough food to keep growing. Soon it came time to start Millie on hay and some grain, and we worried how the mother goats, Annie Penelope, would treat her. She wasn't yet as sturdy or as fast as the kid goats. While my wife fed the goats, I put down Millie's first grain on the other side of the barn, holding a tiny handful for her to taste. Her eyes widened, and she ate. Then my wife screamed, "Oh no, they're coming for her!" I heard the pounding hooves and saw Annie and Penelope rounding the barn, charging towards Millie. I tried to scoot them away, but Annie butted Millie square on her side, while Penelope followed with a hit to the flank. Both goats devoured Millie's hay and grain, pushing the pan along the side of the barn as they gorged. Millie looked sad, and she twisted and licked the spots where she had been hit. My wife and I checked her, pet her, and fret over the situation. I worried that Millie could really get hurt. I couldn't understand the big goat's need to eat all the food when there was plenty for each animal. "I don't get it," I said. "Why do they act like greedy people?" "They were animals," I concluded, "and what could we do about it? Find a way to feed them where there would be less conflict, more harmony?" I took to feeding Millie outside of the livestock fence while the mother goats ran over trying to reach through the wire to get her food while their own grain lay near them. Millie liked to hang out with the goat kids, and even in the safer spot, Millie didn't want to eat alone. We went back to feeding her with the kids, trying to keep Annie and Penelope at bay, but sometimes they still knocked Millie down. Over the weeks, Millie put on weight and filled out. Her ribs disappeared inside her growing body. Her coat became full and shiny as she took on the appearance of a cow rather than of a bony fawn. She liked to be fed next to the kids and didn't mind if they reached over and nibbled from her pan. She seemed content with whatever food she got. As she grew taller, the goat kids playfully used Millie as a jumping board, springing high off the ground, landing on her back, and bouncing back to the ground. Millie would sometimes position herself at angles easier for the kids to hop on and off of her. Whenever I entered the livestock yard, Millie was the first to come for a hug and a pet, sticking out her tongue with the heft of a small anvil and the feel of rough sandpaper. She licked my hand, my arm, or my side. When I walked down to work in the fields, she bounded to the fence closest to me, staring or mooing for attention. I began letting her accompany me around the farm like one of our dogs. Millie would follow and stand dutifully by my side while I fixed a pipeline or dug a trench, needing to first lick each tool before I put it to work. One morning I ambled down to feed the animals, still concerned about the aggressive behavior of Annie and Penelope. I set out flakes of hay and pans of sweetened grain for them, and while they began eating, I put out feed for the poultry, the kids, and Millie. As I set down the grain, Annie and Penelope bolted from their feed, running over to steal the young ones' feed. Penelope came charging with her head down, ready to butt the kids or Millie if they hadn't already scampered away. The kids took a quick nibble and moved from their food. But not Millie. She raised her head from her pan and stayed put. Both Annie and Penelope charged her, heads lowered for a hard butt. Millie lowered her head, took two steps forward, and met Annie full on, knocking her into Penelope. She lowered her head again and pushed both mother goats back away from the feed. Penelope looked baffled and made another try for the grain. Millie gave her a solid shove to her flank. Penelope stopped and looked confused, then retreated. Millie's eyes were wide and intense, and I thought she was getting ready to charge the mother goats once again to take her revenge and to show who was now the biggest and the boss. But she did not. She backed up to the pans of grain and looked over at the three kids who had watched from a distance. The goat kids inched forward toward their food, and Penelope charged. Millie lunged forward and hit Penelope's shoulder, driving her back. Millie calmly then returned to the grain without eating, standing over the kids while they began to feed. Penelope and Annie did not move. The kids gobbled their meal, looking up nervously to see if they were safe. Millie stood guard, not taking a bite. Annie and Penelope slowly walked back to their own feed. Then Millie bent down and casually munched her grain. The kids and Millie finished their meal in peace. At the next feeding, as soon as I put down their grain, Millie stood watching, not eating, while Penelope and Annie looked on from a distance. Not until the kids had finished did Millie allow herself to eat. She continued doing this for several weeks until the kids were large enough to fend for themselves. No more did Annie and Penelope intimidate them, nor did I see Millie make an aggressive move against Annie and Penelope if they stayed peaceful. Emmett came to see how Millie was coming along. I told him what we had observed. "I can't believe what I saw. What kind of a soul or whatever it is inside of Millie," I said. "It's beyond human." "Ah, Jerry," he said with a smile, "didn't I tell you that there's nothing finer than a Jersey?" I said, "I wish I knew people who behaved like her." At the end of another season, just before Millie would have been old enough to begin breeding, my wife and I broke up over things that don't seem so important now, and we left the farm. I offered Millie to our homesteading neighbors, who accepted. With sadness, I walked Millie over, her head now up to my shoulder, while she licked at my ear. I listened to her hooves clopping along the dirt path, and I leaned back and pet the straight line of her chestnut brown back. A couple years later, I visited the farm and asked about Millie, and the neighbor said that he had sold her to a farmer near Soledad, some 50 miles away. I never knew what became of her after that. The cow I never really wanted to own. The end.